In the first segment, we talk a little bit about the fallout after AFCON, but we're not just going to talk about what's happening. People, teams are getting fined. Should they even be fined? Is this good or bad for the perception of AFCON? We break it all down.
And we talk to Sean Francis of Copenhagen about the best job in the world. We talk about the influencer competition, content creator competition that Copenhagen is putting together right now. And we talk some Champions League, especially Pep Guardiola. Pep Guardiola, after a loss to Bodø/Glimt, should they think about moving on? Does Pep Guardiola want to do something else? Because it's getting kind of scary for Manchester City. So all this and more today on The Cooligans. So we were the hosts of the AFCON final for Zoran Mamdani, Mayor Zoran Mamdani.
I remember this. I was there.
Yeah,
thank you for reminding me.
The last time we were hanging out with Zoran, he was just campaigning, and he hadn't. Did he already win?
No, he already won.
He already won. He was the mayor elect.
Yeah. We refused. We didn't want to hang out with a loser. So we said, until you win, don't really bother us.
So he invited us to host the AFCON final.
Yeah, we could have used a little more than 36 hours notice, by the way. That would have been fun.
New York.
Maybe everything happens in a New York minute.
it's a quick text and all of a sudden you're at a wedding.
Yeah. You know what I mean? So, before you know it, you're the DJ. Buddy, grab the arms.
Hold on, I'm the groom.
Yeah, what's the Bluetooth password?
So we did that and it was very fun. I mean, it was really cool. Senegal and Morocco, and the fans, all our friends, all the soccer, the New York soccer elite, were there. So it was an honor to be there and bring up Zoran Mamdani to the stage and everything. But I think this is a sort of, I think it highlights an incredible thing of like what we sort of can expect from a soccer sicko mayor, right? Because he's like, yo, let's put this together. And again, clearly very short notice.
Yeah, it was a free event for the community as well. I don't want people to think like, you know, there was no VIP. I asked. They were like, sure, there's no.
Can you keep these people away from me?
Those are bottles of water. I don't know why you're putting them in a bucket of ice.
But I think it highlights not only like how important soccer is to the New York City mayor,
but how important we are to the soccer community. Is that what you were going to say?
But I was going to focus on the fact that how unifying the sport can be and how it can be used as a tool to help his administration,
especially in such a multicultural city, which we saw firsthand.
Right. So that was awesome to be a part of that. I think the fun part of it is, given that we've been around his staff.
Right. Because usually we start these shows with jokes, not just us glazing each other.
There's literally no glazing. Yeah, okay. At the very least, we're glazing Zoran.
Yeah. Well, you are. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I also will.
Alexis is above that.
I'm just setting
the precedent. Mm-hmm. So we've been around his staff, right? And his staff are not necessarily the biggest soccer fans. Now that the mayor loves soccer, the staff has to be like, soccer. Yeah. I love being a fan.
Us too.
My whole life. Yeah. Okay. So
who are you? some girl from Scarsdale.
So they're locked in. But a fun moment, because the game was so dramatic, right? The AFCON final with all the drama, we're gonna get into all of it. But because the game was in such disarray, his staff also didn't know what was going on. So they were asking us, like, is this normal? Do the players just leave the field? How long is this gonna take? Right. Yeah. And then they were worried about valid things like, hey, we have the union guys, we only got them here for a couple hours.
Yeah.
We're gonna have to pay them like 4x if they
which is true, and it's like, when's the game over? And we're like, that's a great question.
Yeah, soccer's not really like that.
If I knew that, I would get
you see the time up there, it's more of a suggestion.
There's a guy out there in a black shirt, he's got a watch. He's the only guy who knows how long this goes.
You know what, he's not telling any of us, right?
And we're all thinking he's getting paid.
So one of his staff members, city employee, so not,
he was there before the Mamdani administration,
right? Yeah, so he's like, hey, how long is this game gonna go? And we're like, hey, we don't really exactly know. It might go to extra time. If it stays tied after that, it might go into penalties. And this was one of the most surreal things. And I don't expect people to have as much soccer knowledge as I do, but I told them, hey, it might go to penalty kicks. And he goes, what's a penalty?
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, there's, you know, I understand if you don't know offside.
I would have tussled his hair. Like, that's the cutest, that's the cutest reaction I've ever heard.
If you don't know offside, the offside rule, I get it. There's some rules in the sport that are a little complicated. If you don't know what a penalty kick is, like, that, you are so out of, like, popular culture.
Yeah.
That I'm like, I'm starting to worry.
This guy's got other priorities besides soccer, though. Like, he was very upset that someone else wanted to be the stage manager.
Okay.
And he took the job of stage manager. He also applied lip gloss through most of the event. Just to give you an idea, this guy's like, I got other things on my mind besides figuring out what's going on in a soccer game.
No, man. But this was, I was shocked that I was explaining what a penalty kick was. And then I realized as I'm explaining it, I'm like, I've literally never had to explain what a penalty kick is.
You're preparing for Mateo.
I think Mateo's, he already knows.
He got it.
He's Mateo, like, when I turn on like the Apple TV and he'll see the Apple TV logo, he'll be like, he'll go football, because he knows MLS is about to come on.
Right.
So my 2-year-old might know a little
bit more. He's a little bit more. He should have been the stage manager.
He should have been the stage manager.
I do like that. You have dad brain now. Like, you're like, you know what's funny? This guy didn't know what a penalty kick was. I'm like, my hemorrhoid exploded. And I have two very different lives.
Whether I was a dad or not, I would not. That is, there's nothing. I mean, it's not that it's not humorous.
Oh, no, it is, but it's like, it's cute humor.
There's nothing cute about it.
Oh, you're talking about mine?
Yeah, yours is not cute.
No, it was. I thought it was. No, I'm talking about yours is like, oh, this is a cute interaction.
Sure.
With another human being. Look at what a kaleidoscope the world is. You know, what a cornucopia society is. And I'm like, I think I got my period out of my butt. You know what I mean? We just have two very different reactions.
Not even just reactions.
Or like life experience.
Health-wise, I mean, one of us is doing better than the other.
Yeah, and I really hope you catch up. I hope you do better.
All right. Welcome to the Cooligans, everybody. My name is Christian Polanco.
Hey, I'm Alexis Guerrero.
We got a hot show per you.
Oh, boy.
We are.
We need to open a window. It's a hot one.
We're going to be joined
come on. You got to be excited. You got to say it's a hot show and I'm excited.
Yeah, right. Okay. Yeah. I do have to say
this is what the people expect. Except Christian's not warm under his collar and excited at the same time, then I can't enjoy today's show.
You got to say it's a hot show. I'm excited.
There it is. Come on.
And Alexis's hemorrhoid is doing very, very poor.
By the way, you don't know what he's talking about. Listen to the beginning of the show again.
So we're going to be joined a little bit later by the one and only Sean Francis of Copa 90. We're going to be talking about the best job in the world. Mm-hmm. I guess competition to find someone who's going to be covering the World Cup for Copa 90.
He's also like a soccer OG, bro. Like, especially in America. So we talk a little bit about like, yo, is this World Cup going to happen? Is this going to be fun?
So Sean Francis will be. He was on the show about 2 years ago.
He's a regular, bro.
Nice to catch up with him. All right, but we have to start today with AFCON. Morocco is hosting the 2030 World Cup. And in 90 minutes of the AFCON final, they might have ruined their reputation. Does this chaos help or hurt the AFCON tournament and African football as a whole?
In a way, I think it actually helps.
Helps is crazy. This was too terrible, too embarrassing. Why? How does it help?
This is the top topic.
Now, okay, I'm not going to disagree with those points. It was bad and it was embarrassing, but in a way, I think the general chaos around the AFCON tournament is fodder for more people to talk about it. It almost draws more attention. It also gives me the sense that it's like there's a football that's not so corporate. It's a football that's not so, you know, sterile or buttoned up. There's something about it where it still feels like the fans have a lot of say in what's going on. The whistles, the jeering, the lasers, right? 2021 in the final. Those types of things, even little, you know, the dark arts of like stealing, you know, towels. Yeah, maybe pushing and shoving the back of goalkeeper is not the right look.
Maybe.
But there's a theater to it. There's a cinema that is involved in not just what happens on the pitch when it comes to AFCON, that while I would love for things to be a bit more fair across the board and not be all these questions about corruption potentially and stuff like that, that I would love to be out of the game. But there's something about the how much this sort of means to the fans, that there's these little, you know, trying to win in the margins, that I think just adds so much more fodder to talking about the, you don't talk about this with any other competition. We don't talk about this with the Euros. We don't talk about this maybe sometimes with CONCACAF. It could get a little CONCACAF-y, but that's generally more like, you know, trying to hurt the other player. This is, there's something fun about the way it's handled in this continent. And yes, it's probably not good for the sport and it probably doesn't lead to the most fair results. But you can't argue that it's not fun and it's not talked about a lot. We're talking about it now.
Yeah, I mean, it, look, we that kind of stuff doesn't need to happen for us to talk about it.
Does it?
Yeah, it does not have to happen.
Okay, how often we talk about the Asia Championship?
I mean, it's like we watch what we watch or whatever. Yeah. But AFCON is the opportunity for you know, more of the world to be aware of what's happening in African football, right? I mean, just like us in the U.S. and I'm sure in plenty other countries, this is the opportunity. This is why you put on the tournament, so that the rest of the world can see the talent that, you know, the continent has to offer. It sort of, you know, the reason I would argue, like, obviously, this kind of stuff doesn't need to happen for us to be interested in it. But it also sort of reminds me, you know, how this happens in a lot of families of color or whatever. They'll kind of just, sometimes you'll be out with your parents or something like that, and they'll be like, hey, act right. There's white people around, right? Oh, it's like, hey, there's white...
Button it up.
We can't...
Latinos are like, we can't be loud right now.
You can't let them see us like this, because they're going to start assuming things about
white people don't let you experience joy in public. So
part of me, that's the thing that gets triggered in me sometimes when I see this like absolute chaos. I'm like, come on, there's too many white people watching. We can't.
You're like, keep it professional.
So that's my first part of it. But outside of that, yes, I love the, I mean, and I don't know, you know, I watched the last two AFCONs, you know, pretty intently, and then, but this one, I genuinely felt that the level of at least quality and or sort of lack of chaos on the pitch. I mean, Senegal were a fantastic team, like, almost at every single position. They're sometimes previous AFCONs, I've just seen like, oh, you know, there's like one or two players that like, maybe they play in like a league in Africa or South Africa or something like that, and you could sort of see the dip in quality.
Yeah,
this AFCON, and especially with all the semifinalists, I'm like, these teams are just
stacked,
fantastic squads. I'm like, I want to see these teams at the World Cup. I think they're gonna do pretty well, but the drama around. I mean, and obviously starting with the players walking off the pitch. This is not like not over, right? I was genuinely surprised that one, the game finished in like a fairly orderly manner, right? Where like everybody seemingly was safe, like there was a big fight with fans and all this other, like it seemed fine, but this is not over by any means, because Morocco, they just filed the petition to FIFA. And
the way the first sentence of this is written is hilarious. Morocco filed a petition to FIFA and CAF to strip Senegal of the AFCON trophy and award it to them. You must give it to me now.
Excuse me, I have all this paperwork here, and I just want to make sure that they are punished for their indiscretions, and also I get the trophy
and I get awarded.
Okay, and it goes to me.
It's like, we understand if they're stripped of it, it's either replayed or you get it.
Yeah, and they continue to say they cited Article 82, which states that a team that withdraws from a game, you know, essentially loses. In 2025, Morocco filed the petition to suspend the referee of the women's AFCON final that they lost to Nigeria.
Known as WAFCON.
WAFCON, which is
what a great, yeah. You don't often get a verbal acronym, right?
We can't do Wonka Cap.
Yeah. Wonka Cap would be great.
Wonka Cap don't really work.
Yeah, dude. That's where, is it Black Panther 3 shot there?
But so this was something, the Senegalese players walking off the pitch, I We're at Mayor Mamdani's event at a courthouse by City Hall, and I'm literally thinking they're going to abandon this game. How? This sets a terrible precedent, and I just want to. Senegal deserved to win. They were the better team throughout the entire tournament. They deserved to win.
So I also don't care if you walk off the pitch. I don't know. Maybe I'm alone on this.
How could you not?
I could care less because they thought in that moment that they were being cheated out of a final, and you could sit there and point to the penalty, the goal that got called off, and the penalty that's incoming, and you could sit there and say something is afoot, and this isn't fair. What you do in that moment is you walk off. The same as, you know, Landon Donovan's loyal team had walked off the pitch, I believe, twice, if I'm not mistaken, when they heard one of the players being abused or homophobic chants.
Yeah.
You walk off the pitch when you think this is no longer a fair, you know, a match. Partido, I was almost going to speak Spanish. Yeah. My brain's lost. In that moment, you walk off the pitch. I don't see that as like this grave disrespect to the game. I don't. I think it's worse to steal the towels from the goalkeeper.
I respect.
They walk off the pitch because they say, I don't want you to win, and we're going to walk off the pitch. They walked off the pitch because they were being cheated out of this moment.
And I respect them for making that decision. Yeah. I'm not even taking anything away from that. Like, I think it's a bold decision to make, but there's clearly a penalty to that. Nobody's going to be like, hey, okay, cool.
You came back. Who cares?
You stop the game for 15 minutes. But who cares? The fans, they're like, what the hell is going on?
You've never been like at a family dinner and you had to like walk away because you were going to say something wild. What are they going to say? Like, now you don't get dessert? This is stupid. You got heated in a moment. You already thought this is unfair. Why even be a part of this? I'm walking on. It's so stupid to me that people are going to be penalized for walking off. They didn't steal the ball. They didn't shut off the lights. This is so dumb to me. And they came back. This is part of the drama that we love. This is what was everybody doing when that was happening? Oh my God. Oh my God. At that moment, what was the score of this match?
0-0.
And this was a 0-0 match in the final minute, and everyone's on the edge of their
seat. I'm not saying it wasn't
entertaining. This is incredible.
I'm not saying it wasn't entertaining.
So we're going to punish people for being good at their job?
Yeah, that's not being good at your job.
Football is to entertain. Part of football is to entertain.
Part of it.
So this is entertaining.
But what did Sadio Mane say after the game? He said that he wanted to get his team back, that he said, I'm sort of paraphrasing, but that it was like kind of disrespectful to the fans and disrespectful to football for us to basically... step off the field and we should just finish the game. And sometimes, you know, things are not always fair or not always right, but that's football. And I respect
that at the same time, but walking off and getting a punishment for it, so dumb.
I respect them for walking off, but they should be punished for it. Just so, why do you punish anybody for any committing sort of any crime?
Compare this to a crime.
I'm just saying it could be jaywalking.
They literally walk to where their clothes are. That's not a problem for me, man.
It is to deter future teams from doing stuff like this. It can't be a standard thing where I don't think their call, the foul call on Brahim Diaz was a penalty. I personally don't, but the game is the game. You get burned by it sometimes.
Sure,
but ask Mexico fans about the game against the Netherlands and no era penal. It's its own thing.
Walking off because you want to maintain the dignity of the sport and you think that the match you're in doesn't have that, to me, doesn't deserve a penalty. It doesn't deserve a punishment. If anything, you get one less sub your next match. Something stupid. Where maybe it could affect you strategically.
It's going to be much worse than that.
This is ridiculous to me that they're going to be punished in any way, shape, or form. When we just talked about the lasers, you have an entire stadium and you got nobody stopping anybody with it. There's 45 lasers on Mohamed Salah's face. And no one's... That could cause actual damage to a footballer. Could potentially hurt their career shooting a bunch of lasers in his face. No one got punished. I don't know if they got punished, but that to me is not worse than going back to the dressing room
yes.
where your cell phone is. That's punishment.
I mean, look, that's there's a difference between a players doing something and the fans doing something, and obviously nobody condones the laser pointers, which I don't even know. I didn't see laser pointers this AFCON.
There was some AFCON. I didn't see any
in any of the games that I watched. So
also, I'm a fan of that too. It's like, look, we're talking about it still.
Years later, not saying it's not entertaining. And again, it was a soap opera, the whole thing, but Senegal, just like Morocco, is going to deal with their own punishments as well. But Senegal is not, they're not absolved.
No one is. And look, in general, the competition itself, when we're talking about AFCON, the competition itself, we already expect. They're like, yo, this is peak AFCON is something you hear a lot, right? Mm-hmm. Whenever these fantastical things are happening that you normally don't see in like most organized football leagues and matches, right? You don't see this in MLS. You don't see this in Premier League. You don't see this, you know, in the South African League. You don't see like these little sort of dark arts, if you will, like we call it in America, right? To me, this the way this hurts, the thing that hurts this competition moving forward and potentially Morocco hosting, you know, a part of the World Cup, what hurts most is that it calls into question whether what's happening is fair. It calls into question that whether the playing field is level. And that, to me, is like the bare minimum of what you're asking for when you start a football match.
Of course, yeah.
It's 11 on one side and 11 on the other side. The best team wins. Not the best team or the team that also could juice up an audience or can do this or can do that or can, you know, break you down or distract you in other ways. To me, that takes away from the how legible we can really consider the winner of AFCON. And I understand the emotions behind it, and I understand wanting your team to win. You know, one of my favorite food trucks is run by an Algerian guy. The passion in this man when Algeria was on their run, you know, when they scored that, what was it, 109th minute winner. The guy was talking about it as if he was winning this competition,
sure,
as if he was one of the players. I totally understand how important this is. But when you can say, yeah, you won that, but you won that, but there's an asterisk, it takes it away from even the winner. So what's the point, right? You need to find a way to be level. But things like if you think the match is unfair, you have every right to walk off and to punish you for it. And if it's something more than just, you know, a punishment for the sake of showing that you punish, if it's real, if you were talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars or fines or anything like that, then it's ridiculous. And then everyone's on the take as far as I'm concerned, because this pointless. They didn't walk off the field because they didn't want the other team to win, and they didn't want to, oh, I'm going to be disrespectful to that team and walk off. They were losing 3-0. This was 0-0, and they just, one, got screwed out of a goal, and two, are about to get screwed with a penalty. Yo, they have every right, as far as I'm concerned, to do something as simple as say, we are not going to be present.
Okay, but it is, which is, it's just weird that you're like, oh, they shouldn't be punished for that. I mean, of course, they should, and they are. I mean,
it's not like they dressed an illegible player, you know what I mean? It's not like they did anything that goes against the essence of the game.
You're saying it's justified that they walked off. And I'm saying I respect the fact that they did. I have no way to prove if it's justified. They felt, especially after their goal got turned back or disallowed, and no VAR, you know, obviously blew the whistle before the ball went in the net, and no VAR, and then immediately call a penalty. Like as a viewer, I'm like, this is kind of, it feels like the ref is trying to help Morocco win. I mean, that's
and you wouldn't walk away in that moment.
I mean, but like, I understand I'm going to be punished for it. That's all I'm saying.
Let me let them see the scam through.
Oh, I got my throat. Should
we open windows or something?
the fact that they made that decision, like I completely understand. But as I'm watching it, I'm like, oh man, like this. Of course, it's going to cross my mind, and then that's when it goes to, you know, after the 15 minutes, and then Brahim Diaz is going to take the penalty. He Panenkas it and gives it right to Mendy. And now all the conspiracy around, did Brahim Diaz miss that on purpose? And if he did miss it on purpose, like, why would he do a Panenka? Like, it looks, it's only setting him up to look incredibly embarrassed if that was really the decision of both teams, so to miss the penalty and keep the game going because it was like completely unjustified for them to call that penalty. Brahim Diaz making that decision to take the penalty in that way is beyond like absurd, right? And it only there's something about the fact that he did a Panenka that tells me he was not trying to miss, that he was trying to humiliate the goalkeeper. He was trying to humiliate Senegal. So that's why he did the Panenka.
I mean, it's going to take a lot to convince me that he did that that he didn't do that on purpose. I think the agreement was made, all right, whatever, let's just miss the penalty and keep going.
bring the players back out. Let's finish the game. That's how it felt to me in that moment. And regardless of other evidence, I'm going to continue to feel that way unless I'm presented with a, unless Brahim Diaz was like, under no circumstances did I do that on purpose.
Yeah.
I thought I was going to humiliate this guy. So I just think in the end, the fact that we're even talking about this days after the final, and this isn't a competition that's being as disrespected as it used to be, it continues to grow in favor. These little things that we're talking about, whether they are punishable or not, in the end, I think it helps. You know what
sure,
I mean?
Well, look,
it helps like the visibility of the of
maybe.
The, this
I mean, look, but it, look, this is what I'm embarrassed overall for. Like, yes, should they have walked off? It is what it is. I mean, like, I wish it wouldn't have happened, but whatever. But but Morocco, the whole thing fighting with the about the towels, and I mean, it, and they did it all, across multiple matches, and clearly it was a strategy and a focus of like we talk about dark arts. Sometimes they're funny. I mean, I understand if you can do it and get away with it, like similar to during the women's Euros when the when they were doing the taking the water bottle of the other yeah. goalkeepers, and they like who, I forgot who chucked it into the stands. Like if you can get away with it, cool. If the other team knows you're gonna do it and they're trying to stop you from doing it, there's no that's it. You got caught. Stop doing it. To send the ball boys to fight the backup goalkeeper to get the towel and steal the towel from Mendy, that's absurd. That's ridiculous. That is where Morocco as a federation needs to be punished for that. And this is that's not, you're hosting a World Cup. That's not a way to behave. And the higher ups and the people on the staff should this is when you talk about a sportsmanship and fair and fairness in a game, like. This isn't it. I understand like dark arts and some of it can be fun, but if it's like if you got caught, that's it. Wrap it up.
CAF needs to punish them during the competition for doing these things let it get to this point.
Yeah. So just kind of crazy, man. That this is the disappointing part. And this is why a lot of people are kind of happy that Morocco lost, even with all the drama around Senegal. But because of stuff like this, it's just not a good look. They were hosting the tournament. They had every advantage, and they just couldn't get it done on the pitch and quote unquote without the referee's help or blah, blah, blah. This is why a lot of people are being like, you know, today after the final, like today football won and then like the like fairness won because it did. And again, my conspiratorial brain is like, man, it really felt like Senegal was going up against 12.
Yeah, I don't disagree that with that. Game,
it was an entertaining game. Again, there's very few nil-nil games that have this much excitement in them, and this was
a drama. It was a TV novela, bro.
This was one of them. Just to wrap up, I mean, one of the people that was traveling through Africa while AFCON was going on and went to a couple games and stuff like that was Aisho Speed.
Yeah,
and obviously. He's been a figure the last couple of years who I've sort of turned around on Aisho Speed. I thought, you know, early on, especially when he slide tackled Kaká, I remember a couple of years ago, where he's like, this guy, this is absurd. I mean, this kid can't be behaving like this. Yeah. And he's really like grown up. We've sort of seen him grow up and he's gotten a lot of love throughout all these tours these live streaming tours that he does.
Yeah, I'm a big fan. I get a little annoyed when everyone yells Suey. It's like, we get it. You know what I mean?
It's slowed down.
It's the thing of, to me, it's like his fans are more annoying than he is, like his super fans. Speed is traveling through Algeria, and this became, pretty big on the internet. He traveled to an Algerian game, and bottles of water were being thrown at him from the ultras. He was very confused. He's like, well, if these are my fans, why are they throwing bottles of water at me? As he stood in the stands filming with his security guards, more bottles of water are being hurled at him. And there's a lot of questions as to why Algerians are treating Aisho Speed this way. Godfrey, in particular, a comedian here in New York of Nigerian descent, posted a video being like, bro, why he's being treated great everywhere else? Why is it when he goes to Algeria, he's being treated like this? Now, in particular, when it simply comes to the game, I think this is Godfrey not understanding what ultras are.
Sure.
This would have happened anywhere where ultras are like this. There's
it
some ultras.
To us in Seattle.
Yeah. I mean, in a very different level.
Not to the same degree, but yeah
there are some areas. Ultras, if you don't know, right? If you're like Godfrey, if you don't know, obviously, if you're listening to our show, you know who he is, but you know what it is. But for those who don't know, ultras are the fans that are the most dedicated. And sometimes there could be, you know, a nefarious undertone
sure.
to what goes on in those fans.
A fanatic, for the lack of.
Sure. But like if you're in. If you're in Argentina, let's say, in some of those ultras, They do. There's a lot of extracurricular activities that happen in there. They're not sure. just there for the game. Mm-hmm. They wield a lot of power. That's probably the most important way to say it. They're very important individuals that are in there, and they don't want to be filmed. And that is standard. Everyone knows it. The cameras tend not to turn to them during the games unless a goal is scored. You do not film them, especially if you're a nobody walking around. And in this case, in this match, Eichel Speed is a nobody. You are not a player. You're not the rights holder. You're just simply a guy walking around. So if you film them, if you and I were standing there filming them, bottles of water would be thrown at us. They are very powerful. They make, in some cases, not Algeria, in some cases, ultras dictate the players that are purchased by the team or transferred in. What tickets are sold to who? They yield a lot of power in some of these clubs. So when it comes to something like this, ultras have a lot of say. That's standard fare. I'm not going to sit here and say, without a doubt, there's no such thing as racism in Algeria. Who's stupid enough to say that? Right. Not me. In this case, simply bottles of water being thrown at them. This was you're filming ultras. And if you don't know what ultras are and you don't understand the culture of soccer, you're not going to understand what's happening here. Your first thought is going to be like, they're doing that to him because they don't like Eichel Speed, or they don't like that he's black, or they don't like that he's American, or they don't like that he's streaming. It's very simply, don't film these dudes. And if if you caught yourself in an alleyway with these guys, you'd be like, man, you know what? I probably shouldn't have filmed these guys.
There's a lot of, even to our comedy peers, because even a lot of comedians don't follow the sport, don't know too much about it. Some are just as obsessed as we are.
Especially if your only point of reference is American sports.
Right. And that's the thing. It's like, if you saw something like this happening at a NFL game or a baseball game, which fights happen in the stands all the time and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But it's usually like the guy said something to his girl or like
what. The moment anything is thrown in like an NBA game or an NFL game, they shut it down.
Yeah, there's a clear tradition and history with not even just like the sport itself or just the league itself or the team itself. It's like the supporters themselves have their own. They're the club sort of historians, right? And some people are. I mean, it is their life, and by you going there and like filming them or trying to make content out of it or whatever, they're like, no, you are disrespecting the thing I've dedicated my life to.
You should see how they handle jokes on the internet.
So look, that's especially for us. I mean, it's something we have to. We learned how to kind of navigate it as sort of best we could. It's like comedians, and then it's almost like a religion, right? It's like you don't want to disrespect somebody's religion, but you want to find ways to make jokes about it where it's like not as offensive. Maybe not as offensive is not the word or. Whatever, like you just have to find a way. Like, how do I get to this joke while also not having you throw bottles of water at me?
Yeah. And the truth be told, the closest reference in America is probably like gangs, and not because crime or whatever. It's just that you would never disrespect, somebody's gang to their face. Like, and that's essentially what. Like, blood has been spilled over the fandom of certain clubs and of certain things. People have died over this. There's, some people have like LL, and an initial like long live this mm-hmm. in their social media bios and stuff, because their people that they associate with have passed away for the love of the gang or for the love of their group or whatever. That's very similar to this. So it's like, imagine walking up to a Bloods meeting and filming. You might get something thrown at you. You know what I mean? And I'm not sitting here calling them Bloods or Crips or anything like that gang members, but that passion of like for the group, you just would never do that. That's the similar thing to ultras. So understanding that, I think, maybe puts it in a different perspective. Other things that might have happened on the live stream, I'm not watching 24 hours of live show speed.
I feel bad in that like every other country he went to, he got so much love and support. Every other country in Africa, he got people like just losing their minds, and it sort of reminds me
that he's almost like an ambassador.
Sure, and to some degree it makes he shows a younger generation and like he dispels a lot of myths. A lot of times people think like Africa is like huts and villages and blah blah blah, and it's not modern, or they don't have modern technology, or the people aren't modern and stuff like that. And he is showing how much alike we are, which I imagine
we need more of.
Yeah, and I imagine there's certain I would imagine people in like this president's administration is like, yo, Speed, don't be making them look human.
Whoa.
Tone it down. We're trying to colonize and pillage
a
little bit.
Go film a couple huts. It could really help us out.
So So credit to him. I mean, it sucked that that's what happened, but unfortunately, there's no negotiating with ultras, regardless of the country that you're in. Like, they make the rules, and if you don't want to, you know, it's their house, and if you don't want to deal with it, then you can't go. And that's how I process it. Unless it's like straight up violence and something like absolutely crazy, but. That's, yeah, there's certain rules you got to respect.
Bottles of water being thrown at you. You got off easy.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm like, oh, it could have been worse. Speed or whatever. So
we've seen it. Come on. We always say legends. We already know this dude's a legend. I've introduced him on the show more than once. Mm-hmm. But also, just a good friend of the show.
And he's coming back because, people can't be away from us too long.
They get an itch. They need us.
they need us for the cure.
You need more Cooligans. Ask your doctor about Cooligans. This person did. You've done everything there is to do in American soccer, but right now you are the what at Copenhagen? What's the official title?
Executive creative director? Is that? I think I got it right.
All right, we'll ask him ourselves. Ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only, Sean Francis! The OG.
Thank you. If I'm a legend, you're a liar, but I'll take it.
You already know. Who doesn't know you in American soccer? Then they do not belong in American soccer.
People who have good taste.
That's not true, because we have amazing taste and we know you. What is your official title? It's
executive creative director for North America.
North America. That's long business card. That is.
I got the Canadians.
Okay, very nice.
I got the Mexicans. Mexico. I got the Americans.
Very nice. You got everybody.
I got them all.
Yeah. So for anybody new, just real quick, let's just give the CV real quick. Just because Sean Francis, if you want, you were on the show in 2024. If you want to hear about, just that era of Sean Francis right now at Copa 90, but you've done it all. You worked at MLS, you worked at Nike. Did you work at Nike or different?
Well, you worked for brand agencies, so you've worked with everybody.
Yeah. I like to work with people more than I like to work for people, I guess.
It's a great way to look at it. Someone put that on merch, bro.
And so you pretty much have done it all. But we right now you are working with Copa 90, and you are best job in the world, and that whole campaign, which a lot of people have seen, where they find content creators, and you're sort of narrowing down to pick the person that is going to pretty much cover the World Cup for you guys. Is that a good, decent description of what's going on?
Yeah, that's very decent. It's like The Voice if you can't sing, but you can nerd out about ultras and supporters groups, right? Basically, like, we had, I think, 3,600 submissions from people.
Yeah, that's what I'm curious about, just that process, because that is a, it doesn't seem fun to start...
Yeah. Who watched all that?
Whittling all of that, all of those submissions down.
A lot of us. A lot of us watched a lot of videos. And you know, the easy thing about that kind of process is, right, you can separate good from bad pretty quickly and pretty easily.
Sure.
So right, getting the ones out, okay, this just flat out not gonna work.
Yeah.
Getting those out of the way is the easy part. It's when you get into the ones that could work. It's whittling down, okay, who could work, but who really could work. That's where it got difficult. So we got down from like 3,500, 3,600 people down to 5 now.
Nice.
Three based in the US, one in Canada, one in Mexico. They all kind of have a different beat, so to speak. They're all kind of covering different topics and have a different kind of thing. But at the end of the day, we're looking for someone who can, you know, be a voice and face, not just for Copa 90 during 2026 into the World Cup, but kind of be a voice and face for soccer culture in America, right? Soccer culture in America is not just one thing, but we kind of feel that, like, the best way to tell our stories is to tell our stories ourselves, right? And what I mean by that is, like, the best way to hear from the American soccer community is to let the American soccer community have the mic.
Yeah.
You know?
So I have 5 down. You got to whittle it down to someone. What are we going to do? Like cage fighting? You know what I mean? 5 people enter. 1 person leaves. I'm just tossing ideas.
I'm imagining the people that we've chosen. I'm like, She looks like she could
no,
take
she
a punch.
No, she ain't winning the whole thing. She's a scrapper, she looks like bro. She can be, you know. She's a scrapper. We know her.
But and look, the content brain has to go hear an idea like that. I mean, like, all right, can we do it? You know what I mean? You can't just immediately throw it out the window.
No. I mean, look, man, our kind of internal mantra creatively, you know, for our sort of editorial voice at Copen ID is bold, mischievous, and real. Mm-hmm. I submit to you that soccer creator
that
cage
sounds
fighting
like the slogan for lingerie
is bold, mischievous, real. you might replace the real with the artificial fake.
Hey, whatever you're into. Yeah.
No judgments.
If
no
I
judgments.
Can touch them, it's all good to me.
They real to me.
Okay.
Wait, so, is this where you thought the conversation was going
to
go?
No, not at all. But I'm glad to be here nonetheless.
Welcome back to the Cooligans, folks.
So let's talk yeah. about the World Cup itself, because obviously in 94, what were you doing in 94 when the World Cup was going on?
Did you go to any of those games?
Yeah, I was in high school living in Amarillo, Texas, like the hinterland, the buckle of the Bible Belt. Like there was no soccer, bro. Like soccer was not a thing.
You were like, hey guys, there's a sport where you don't use your hands. And they're like, get me out of this locker.
Were you already into soccer though?
What? You know what, man? I played soccer as like a little kid, but I was done by like age 10 playing. But then
hung up the boots. Like, oh.
Yeah, it just wasn't a thing, man. I mean, it's the 80s in the South.
Like, Amarillo feels like a high school football town.
Absolutely, bro. Yeah. I played 1 year in Amarillo. I played 1 year outside of Amarillo, but Amarillo High, the Sandies. I did not graduate from that high school. I graduated from Tascosa High School. Shout out Tascosa High School. But these high school, there you go. The high
school.
Don't
get enough love.
That's what the Sandies,
and it was like a sandstorm was the mascot. It's the least scary.
That's kind of cool.
No
though.
One's intimidated by the Sandies. Who are we playing today? Oh, the Sandies, yeah, man. They're rough. Yeah. No,
wear goggles.
Like Sandy? No. But you know who was in our district?
Who?
It was Odessa Permian, like the Friday Night Lights.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah.
Yo. Wow.
Full heart, can't lose, motherfuckers.
right. But you know, the TV show is based on the book, right?
Oh, okay.
And the book was like the legit story of this this high school who just dominant, bro. Mm-hmm. Like in 10 years, they won the Texas State Championship like 5 times in a 10-year period.
Damn.
Which, and you know Bayern how hard Munich. That is to do? You know what
yeah,
I mean? Like Texas.
Bayern Munich, bro.
Yeah. But the wild thing is the town, Odessa, is like 120,000 people. They got two high schools. And the rumor, everyone says like the district lines are drawn in pencil. Uh-huh. Like if there's a hot linebacker who's like 4 blocks outside the district, well, we're gonna redistrict this season to bring him in.
Gerrymander to get this kid too.
But it's wild.
We got a tournament to win, kid.
But yeah, West Texas, moving. It was high school football. But yeah, like 94 World Cup came around, and like I spent that summer. I was in high school. Like me and my brother, and my girlfriend just spent the summer on the couch, like just glued. You know what I mean? Like just absolutely glued.
Okay. So given that the 2026 World Cup, obviously in the U.S. with all the every day there's drama that just makes the World Cup feel a little bit more not as unifying as it's sort of meant to be. So it feels incredibly corporate. It feels sometimes a little soulless. It feels a little bit like we all have to sort of navigate through this. So what is your thought on that perspective of like telling these stories of the World Cup, but with the host nations and given the U.S. and everything going on, like, how do we navigate through all of that?
Well, I think the great thing about us, Copenhagen, telling these stories is we're always telling stuff from a fan POV. You know, we don't turn the camera on the field. We turn it at the stands. So to some degree, it kind of lets us tell some stories that might be free of some of the negativity, right? You know, of the sort of jingoism and nationalism that can be can be applied to it. You know, the comedian Drew Carey, the comedian and soccer sicko, Drew Carey.
Seattle Sounders owner.
But I remember seeing a quote from him one day where he said, you know, international soccer is war just played by nonviolent means.
You
know what I mean? It's almost like Hunger Games. It's like this thing where people can get their beefs out without actually fighting. You know, it's like this proxy war kind of thing. But I think the interesting stories I think are going to come from like, this is a wild time to invite the world to America when America seems to be doing everything to kick the world out of America.
Right.
You know, so it's going to be interesting from that POV. But I think for any fan traveling, whether they're coming from abroad or you're leaving someplace like Amarillo, Texas, to go to Dallas, Texas, to watch games. Those trips and those experiences, regardless of the results on the field, regardless of the geopolitical situations and things going on, these are going to be once in a lifetime experiences. These are going to be like real memories that are made. And I think crucially, real fans are going to be made. Because in the same way that I didn't touch soccer for 6-7 years, didn't even see a soccer game, didn't talk about it or anything. And then 94 World Cup came back and it was like that spark of a sicko was born. Yeah. Mm-hmm. This World Cup is going to be tenfold, right? Because you think about 1994, man, like A, America didn't care about soccer. We didn't even have a league. It wasn't on TV or any of that stuff. B, the internet wasn't a thing. Social media wasn't a thing. Streaming sports wasn't a thing. Soccer was very much in this silo, kind of off in a dark corner, as where now soccer is like, it's Charlie XCX. It's everywhere. You know what I mean? You can't avoid it. Mm-hmm. So I think the moment for growth here is going to be something we've never seen in this country. The thing that I'm really interested in is like, what happens in August, right? Everyone's gone and gotten charged up. We spent the last 7 years talking about this. The next 6 months, we're about to see the conversation around this explode. Tournament's going to happen. All this great stuff's going to happen. All these great storylines are going to happen. All these new fans are going to be made. And then what happens? What are all these brands that spent a lot of money to be a part of the World Cup or a lot of money to talk about soccer this year because soccer is going to be the sort of cultural zeitgeist moment? Mm-hmm. What are they doing in August? Are they just walking away from it? Or are they going to keep talking about it? I think the smart ones are going to keep talking about it, knowing that we've got a Women's World Cup next year, which even though it's not in America, make no mistake, I think American audiences probably tune in more for the women than they do the men. I think the U.S. women's team, let's keep it a buck. They're more of a household name in this country than the men are, right? So that's next year. The year after that, you have the Olympics. Those ladies and the U.S. men are going to be playing again on home soil. So there's more moments coming. You know, there's more moments coming, but I'm real curious to see what's the drop off like? Is there a drop off, or is this really the moment where it's like, oh, okay, soccer is massive now?
What are those brands going to do? Hire you as a consultant? You've worked for them already.
What? I mean,
my question is, if COVID-90 is really like the voice of the fan, and you talk about putting the camera at the fan, who are you pointing the camera at? A bunch of people that can afford $1,000 tickets? Like, how do you keep that fan culture when most of the real fans have been priced out?
Yeah, well, dude, that's the thing. But the great thing about the World Cup is like that stadium is only a part of it, man. Like you talk to anybody who's been to a World Cup, the stories they're going to tell you about aren't going to be from watching the game. They're not going to tell you about the scores. If they tell you about the score, it's in the context of like the moment when we went up, you know, 2-1 in the 93rd minute, right? Mm-hmm. Stories are going to tell you about, we're on this train in Germany and met all these guys. We were going to the Poland game. We bunked in with them, and they took us on this crazy drinking excursion around town or whatever.
And now I have a baby.
Yeah. Whose baby is it?
Yeah.
It's one of those German guys.
Yeah, but you know what I mean? It's like there's so much that goes on that the game is this much of it, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, the first time I hung out with you guys was at an MLS Cup in Toronto, right?
Right.
I don't remember the score of the game. I don't remember which of the three matchups it was because they've had MLS Cup in Toronto three times, and all I can remember is every time is somehow colder than the one before.
Brutal. What
right?
a brutal city.
But I have...
It was nil-nil. The Sounders won in penalties.
Yeah, I don't know.
But remember hanging out
Gretzky whiskey. Remember we were drinking Wayne Gretzky's whiskey in the suite they accidentally upgraded me to. Yeah, you know what I mean? It's like all the peripheral things around there are where the good stories come from, and all the peripheral things around the games is where passion comes from, right? It's all the stuff around the 90 minutes makes that 90 minutes matter more. So for us, it's like, you know, really digging into that. I think the interesting thing is like one of my coworkers, Ross, who's a certified genius, you know, he said, you know, this is going to be the first World Cup that's not just broadcast to the people, but broadcast by the people. Like, yeah, we're all going to watch the game on TV, but we're going to be consuming quite a lot of this game through our phones, mm-hmm. right? And just seeing like fan video where like, you know, some guy does some crazy celebration, right? Or look at what's going on in AFCON right now. The guy, the Congo fan who stands like a statue every episode. Like that might be the thing I've seen more than the actual games.
Yeah.
I've seen more footage of that guy on my phone than I've seen actual highlights from the games, right? So I think this is going to be the first World Cup where it's like people are going to be able to really take this in. I mean, social media's been around for years, but this is the first one where like the creator era is it feels like it's a fully formed thing. Last World Cup, we were still in the influencer era, right? Yeah, yeah. There's a little bit of a difference there, right? Mm-hmm. The influencer era, it's like, you know, they flew me out to this thing because I'm cool and, you know, I got a bunch of followers and they gave me some
There's a picture of me doing a peace sign.
Exactly.
I got flued out. To the World Cup.
You got flued out, right?
Okay.
And look, if somebody want to flew me out.
A Qatari prince is taking care of me.
I'm with it. Right. I'm
I have
with
to do
it.
What with that fish? Anyway.
I'm with it. But now it's like we're in the era of the Rahimoviches, the Eliza Eschwards, where, you know, all these people who go out and they're not there just because they're a cool guy or a good looking girl or any of that. They're there because they tell stories and make content and make something interesting and make something that people like them, other fans, see valuable.
I'm out of curiosity because we were talking about Lumumba, the guy in the Democratic Republic of Congo, and who would be the American equivalent? Like, what is the, if we had somebody stand there for 90 minutes, who would you want to see? My first thought is Miley Cyrus in the Party U in the USA. Just for 90 minutes, just hold your hand up. Anybody who could be our Lumumba? What do you think?
Not Miley. I'm gonna tell you that right now.
Although I mean, Miley cool, but
I'm just saying,
hey, man. I want to talk about Miley Cyrus for 1 second. Miley Cyrus should just do covers.
Hold on, let me just
Miley Cyrus. This is the ex music biz guy coming out. Miley Cyrus should just do covers. Just do covers.
She kills it.
She's incredible.
Did you see that, like, when the Foo Fighters drummer passed away, Taylor Hawkins had this big tribute concert. She came out with Def Leppard and did a Def Leppard song. And she had her hair, like, teased all, like, blonde 80s and, like, a Tina Turner-ass, like, mini skirt, beer in one hand, a cigarette in the other hand. It was just, like, 80s trashy rock chick. And it was, like, she could have simultaneously, like, single-handedly brought back hair metal.
Right.
Like instantly if she kept doing that. But I digress. Anyway. Who would be our
Lumumba?
Okay, so we've taken her off. She's off of the list.
Of the list. Who would be our Lumumba? I don't know. You know what I would like to see? I would love to see if it could be two people. It's Oguchi Onye who was staring down
Zlatan Ibrahimovic?
No. Wow. There's no video of that.
Yeah, allegedly.
Who was the Mexican player? Jared
Borghetti.
Wow. Who was the stare down? That is the greatest moment for me, possibly in American soccer, because it has nothing to do with results or anything. It's just pure attitude. It's the one time where it looked like the U.S. were like an absolute dominant force. And Gucci's just got that "I wish you would" look on his face, right? And it was just so good. I want a statue.
I can counter that with Matt Miazga and Diego Lainez doing the.
You ain't tall enough for this ride, my G.
I found it to be heightest.
That's why we liked it. We're problematic here, Sean.
I found it to be heightest. Maybe I was like peak Jersey, right? Peak North Jersey. I do not care.
We interviewed him and I was like, this is exactly how I thought you would be. You are to a T, the dude in front of me at the deli.
Oh my God. Clifton, stand up.
Yeah, for real. Literally, stand up.
That's a panel, right? That's a podcast right there. The three Clifton. You get Matt Miazga.
Who else is from Clifton?
Matt Miazga, Giuseppe Rossi.
Oh my God.
Oh, yeah.
And little known, this is for all the Red Bull sickos. Johnny Barajo.
Oh, we've had him on the
Johnny's
show.
The homie. Yeah.
You're gonna need captions for people that aren't from New Jersey though. Because the marble mouth that you have in that, Giuseppe Rossi alone.
The three sponsors are gonna be Waste Management.
Oh,
Taylor Ham.
Today's show is brought to you by a guy.
Hey, you know what? You ask too many questions.
Yeah, we know him. Don't worry about it. We don't ask him where his money comes from, but the check cleared. You speaking about all these players from back in the days, you've been around for about how minute? MLS is about to change their schedule to a fall schedule.
Yeah.
I just want to hear your thoughts. What's your immediate reaction to that?
My immediate reaction was like, this is dumb.
What?
Whoa.
We love this.
But I've changed.
Okay. Start with why you thought it was dumb.
I thought it was dumb because I immediately think of everything from a fan POV. And I am a fan, right? I think I do a pretty good job of balancing my fandom with being a professional. But at the end of the day, I'm a fan who's lucky enough to find a way to make my living in the game, right? Yeah. So when you said to me, yeah, we're going to flip to that, you know, fall to spring, quote unquote, European schedule or whatever, my immediate thought is, I don't want to be there on opening day, March 23rd, as it is. You want me to be there in January, December? Absolutely. Hell to the no, to the no, no, no. And I'm just in Jersey.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about people in Minnesota. I'm people, yeah. people in Toronto.
Chicago.
Chicago. It's like, oh, this feels bad, right? But then when they actually outdoor come out.
Montreal.
Oh, God, just awful, right? Right?
To watch a team lose 4-0?
And it's not even about being up north. Have you been to Kansas City even in December? Yeah, yeah. Do you know what I mean? St. Louis, like a good half the league can be uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. I'll just say that in those months. But then they actually came out with their plan. And it's like, oh, okay, we're going to start in August. We're going to go to like December, which is what they do now, early December, MLS Cup.
Yeah.
Take a bit of a break. That starts back up mid-February, which is roughly when the league starts now.
Right.
I'm like, okay, it's really not that big of a shift. And the more I thought about it, I was like, okay, this is all right. Now, for me personally, I do live at the beach. So this will avoid some existential crises I have on summer Saturdays of like, am I doing the beach thing or am I driving 45 minutes to the stadium?
Mm-hmm.
So I've kind of come around to it. You still won't find me doing Minnesota away in February. Not going to happen. But
well, not to
I
see
like
the
it.
Rebel.
Yeah, why would you do that? But I do like it from a player personnel point of view because it really is going to help them in the transfer window. And that really is going to help them get better talent. And I think the thing with this league is it's grown leaps and bounds. Make no mistake. Better facilities. Better stadiums. Committed ownership. Varied and diverse ownership. More expansion teams. All that stuff is great. But if we don't have good players, it doesn't matter, right? So anything that can be done to up the level of the game is only going to fuel all these other things, which will fuel the overall growth. So I've reluctantly come around to it.
Yeah, the other aspect, I think, obviously players and lining up the transfer windows, but then also lining up the transfer windows in regards to coaches, right? We saw what happened with Wilfred Nancy. He goes to Celtic for 33 days.
Grand opening, grand closing.
Hey, they can't even.
That's more days than I've coached Celtic, so good for you.
But a big reason why it doesn't work out is because a coach like that probably needs a preseason and needs some time to implement, you know, a very different style of play than Celtic is used to playing. So I think that in itself is going to help the league as well because coaches can come and go at the proper time. You're not going to be getting coaches arriving midseason or leaving their clubs midseason or whatever. It'll just open up the opportunity for better coaches to understand the league and be in a better position when they do arrive.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. If we can talk about Wilfred for a hot second,
sure,
he's from a closet Celtic fan. That was never going to work out. It was never going to work out, bro. Like, never. Because you can't come from, as much as I love soccer in America, there's no pressure. There's really no pressure around being a coach in MLS.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I look at Peter Vermees, right, who just left Kansas City. He's been the coach since they have been called Sporting Kansas City.
Bro, and Diego Simeone are the two longest tenure coaches, I think, honestly.
Yeah. It's wild, right? There's no pressure here. So you take someone like Wilfred Nancy, who's coached in Montreal and coached at Columbus, who were both great cities, had so much success in Columbus, right? I mean, Columbus went from being an almost irrelevant kind of they exist to an almost not existing to being like a really powerful force in this league now. You know, but there's still no pressure there. And you take it from that to Celtic, which are, you know, the only two big teams in that league. And you're also kind of a mirror for all these other cultural things. Like, bro, like, you would never. That was never gonna work. That was never gonna work.
He was too chill. We met him last year. We interviewed him.
It was like, he booked a jazz band for a rock concert.
You can't not like him and immediately be sort of enamored by his like wisdom of the game and how he views it. But there's something to maybe that's just European football or maybe just football in the UK that is like, we don't need all that. We need results. We need to get stuck in. We need to just like, you know, show that grit and that heart and we can't be being embarrassed by Rangers and stuff like that. And almost like nothing else matters. They don't really necessarily care if it's like beautiful football at all, which is, that's what I wanted to see. And I would have loved if he had more time to do that, to make Celtic, if Celtic could look like Columbus Crew and play in that way, I would, that would have been awesome. But that's just that they're not there.
Same time. But there's also that thing too, where it's like, you know, people just sometimes just don't fit where they are. You know what I mean? There's a, that just is a, that doesn't just apply to players, right? There are 1,000 players you can think of that were absolute dogs balls at one club, but then went to another club and blew up. You know, my personal one that always gets me is, I think of Dwayne De Rosario, one of the MLS greats, gets traded to Red Bull, and you're like, oh my God, this is our year. Yeah. Terrible.
Yeah.
Half season. He scores 2 goals, one of which was a PK, and has like 1 assist. They trade him to DC United, of all places, and then midseason.
A lot of Eagle celebrations.
Yeah, yeah.
Half season. Yeah. Scores 18 goals and I think 12 assists.
Mm.
Lights out. D-Row was always D-Row, but he just did not fit at Red Bulls, and it, the result showed. Same thing in Apple with coaches, I think.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. It's easy to see. I think of Chicharito waiting for crosses to come at LA Galaxy. And you're like, who designed this? This is not why you bring this guy in. When you look at the way MLS is going, you talked about what's going to happen after the World Cup. Mm. Do you think MLS will be a benefit in a major way from the post-World Cup bounce? What's it going to take for MLS to be considered cool in this country?
Can't be manufactured, man. It's just got to happen organically. You know, it's like you never give yourself a nickname. You know what I mean? Like certain things just... Mm. Have to happen organically. Eighth grade,
I'm the razor.
Yeah. I tried it. It didn't work. You know what I mean?
Fetch ain't happening.
Yeah. Fetch. Wow. Okay. That's a good callback. But it's got to happen organically, man. And I think it's like, you know, there are some very positive things, like, you know, the Apple deal, which has been much discussed, and the bones of that have been picked over forever. You can't deny that the day Tim Cook tweeted out that deal, The value of that, right? The eyeballs on that, that's something MLS can't pay for. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? No one can pay for it. Like, that's just...
We need Tim Cook put in, like, you know, chains on players, like Death Row Records. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like,
you've
been
Apple,
you
been
you rock, yeah. Rockefeller
yeah.
now.
Yeah. I don't think, there's no... we need to. There's no magic bullet for it.
Yeah.
But what you're talking about there, man, there's something to that. I think one of the tools that could really help is like MLS has more celebrity owners than any league on the planet, right? You've got a couple like McConaughey and Will Ferrell and Ciara who are pretty out there and whatever. You got a lot of other people who are very influential who, other than the press release of them owning a team, you don't hear them talk about.
Where's KD at?
Yeah, where's KD at? I mean, the NBA guys alone, right? The KD, Nash, James Harden, like all these guys, right? Those guys have sway. Those guys have cultural sway. You know what I mean? KD suddenly starts showing up front row at Philly Union games, you best believe it's going to make SportsCenter.
Right.
You know what I mean? We see it all the time when people, celebs, show up at Miami's games. Every time Kim's there, every time LeBron is there, Biebs is in L.A., right? That always makes the news. But the interesting thing to me is, like, why aren't these guys and girls who own these teams, why aren't they front row? Why aren't they work for your money? You, like, make your money, help your money work for you.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, do your bit. I'm not saying they're not doing their part. Make no mistake. They're doing the work behind the scenes. But, man, like, some of these people have real influence and real cultural sway in getting them out front and getting them to look like, I'm not just here because my money is involved. Like, I'm really passionate about it in the way that you see from McConaughey. You see it from Will Ferrell a bit. But I think it's more than those guys.
Yeah, okay. Natalie Portman out handing out orange slices at Angel City games. What are we doing?
MLS guys? Didn't Steve Nash bring out the MLS Cup at the final? Didn't he do that? Was that him?
He was involved.
He was. Am I crazy? It was him, right? I think it was him. Anyway, what did I want to ask you? Best job in the world. So five contestants left. What's the process now? And how are people keeping up with the finalists?
Yeah, so each finalist has their sort of series, a 3-episode series, and then off of the series you've got this sort of like spin-off content. So let's say if one of the episodes was an interview with you or you, spin-off content would be like, you know, here's 5 questions about Lexi's favorite hats, or here is BTS things that didn't get cut, right? So each, all told, I think each contestant's going to have like 15 pieces of content go out, right? Those are all kind of hitting the air right now on Copa 90 and their respective Instagram and TikTok channels. That stuff's going to roll out for the next couple of weeks, probably to about mid-February. Once it's all out in the public, then we internally going to look at it all and see, you know, who resonated best with the audiences, but then also like who performed well data wise. So it's, you kind of got to look at the numbers.
Then
you also kind of have to look at, okay, is this person's numbers were great, but the content doesn't really hit with our audience, or this person hit with our audience, but it didn't really bring in new viewers.
Right.
There's a whole rubric of how we'll judge.
So it's not just views, right? You can't just run.
No, because it's like, you know,
because that'd hire a couple bots. I said, yeah, let's get this thing.
Yeah, yeah. That's the thing, right? If you make it all about likes or followers, those things can be bought, you know. And then in this day and age, right, in the age of the algorithm, those are kind of like vanity metrics. Social media doesn't work like it used to, right? It's like now the algorithm just serves you up what it thinks you want, even if you don't. There are people I do not follow on TikTok that I see every day on TikTok, even though I don't follow them, because it keeps wanting to put that in front of me. So the vanity metrics is kind of a little bit of a thing of the past, but it's like there's other data that actually tells you the story, right? I think it's very interesting for us. It's like we always want to grow our audience. So one of the things we're really going to be looking at, just to give you an example, is like whose content has really brought in new audience. So you might see someone who's like, okay, great, this really banged with our established Copa audience. But the interesting thing is it brought in this huge, you know, 30% of the people that watched it weren't following Copa.
Right. Yeah.
That's interesting.
Even just the name, Best Job in the World, like, you know, we've been doing this, it's over 10 years, right? This is our 10th, we're going into our 11th year of the Cooligans and doing all this.
This is a joke that went way too far, huh?
But seriously,
it got out of hand.
When he was like, yeah, I'll do a couple videos with you. Look at him now, working with me like, weekly for 10 years.
I got
years.
LLC documents. I got what the hell's all
crazy.
This?
Lawyers.
Yeah.
But the even Best Job in the World, I look at that and I'm a little, not even necessarily skeptical, but I'm like, it's a great job, but it is work. And I'm saying this to highlight, like, It's one of the coolest jobs. But even when you are on a match day to go vlogging, let's say you're filming yourself, you're capturing all this stuff, it is what should feel like, I think what it makes it look like, we just had fun at a game and 90 minutes and whatever. But it's like what isn't always captured is like the you know, I remember the US-Mexico game we went to in Mexico City.
Azteca,
It was a 3-hour commute. I mean, we left
our hotel was 30 minutes away.
Our hotel was we left 3.5 hours early, and we got there maybe like right when the game started.
Y'all
right?
got blade money?
Bro. I wish I had one in my hand. I would have got to the front of the line. The line was all over. We didn't get into the 55th minute.
Yeah, it's really the work around, obviously, getting to a game and you know, figuring out how to get there. Then it's like bring your equipment, making sure you can get it through security. Then filming all this stuff and then staying after the game to see if you can get interviews. And then editing and then copying all the footage from that hard drive to the computer and then editing, like, it is best is like not even the word I would use, it right? It's like it's very much a job. And I think, you know, hopefully what this also captures is like what the content creators and so, I mean, we, out of all the people that are involved, the finalists, we know Cheyenne Foster and her story is remarkable, of going to buying a van and driving through all these different cities and then seeing her story around just being parking in like, hopefully cops don't think she's a homeless person, like sleeping in a van and stuff like that. And it really is incredibly grueling. I mean, it's fun to capture content around soccer, but it's generally a thing that is incredibly time consuming. It's not, you don't get paid a whole ton of money to do it. And it's really a passion project. So it's like, that's what I'm hoping this whole thing captures. And I know that the winner is going to be it's going to be an incredibly fulfilling thing to just be like, oh, okay, all these years of work and effort
summed up to this like moment. And so it must be, it's going to be incredibly rewarding for that person. But that's what one of the things I hope it highlights.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think for those, for whoever that person is that, that comes out of this, all five of them have expressed at different points how they, you know, like, yeah, we've been fans of Copenhagen forever. We came up watching all these great, you know, YouTube documentaries and all this stuff. Like, you know, to be able to put in the work that lets you knock off 3,499 other people off the throne for you to get the thing. Like, that's got to be incredibly, I'm king of the world.
Yeah, yeah. Even top five.
Kind of feeling.
Even top five is.
Yeah. You did something if you're in the top five.
But at the same time, it's a lot of work. We all know, right? Yeah. I always say, man, everybody wants a job in sports till they get a job in sports.
Yeah.
Right? Because everyone thinks it's, oh, yeah, we're just, you know, flying on team planes and going to stand on the sideline and, you know, doing outfit of the day on the sideline. You know what I mean?
Like TikTok dances with the players.
Yeah, it's not all that, bro. Like, it's you know, working, like, sitting cross-legged on the concrete floor in a hallway outside of a locker room at 1 a.m. because I got to get this post up. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like,
And if you don't get that interview, if you don't get that photo, you didn't do your job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, man.
It's a lot of stress. What are you looking forward to with this World Cup? You've been, this is how many World Cups now you've paid attention to since 94?
Yeah, so, I don't know.
Damn.
Enough.
Yeah.
I don't want to age myself.
What are you looking forward to in this one now?
Oh, man. This one.
By the way, 94, you were 2 years old. Just for everyone. Yeah.
But I was very knowledgeable.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You really took a lot of it.
I got Benjamin Button. Yeah. No. This World Cup, what am I looking forward to? I'm looking forward to, one, to seeing how this expanded field works out now that we've got, was it 800 teams? Yeah, yeah. I don't know, whatever. That's interesting to me because I'm hoping that one of these sort of unheralded, I'm not going to say minnows, I always feel like that's a little bit disrespectful, but, you know, the Cape Verdes of the world, the Curaçaos of the world, like, I want to see some of those folks, like, just the joy that they're going to get out of it, right? Even if they don't win, Curaçao's going to this thing. Curaçao fans are like, we ain't winning this thing.
Yeah.
We're at the World Cup. And that enough, that alone will be enough for them to have that experience. I also want to see some of the nations that we don't get to see often that always bring it. Ireland and Scotland. I want to see the Ireland and Scotland fans like just wilding out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
The sunblock gonna be crazy.
Yeah. Like
what are Ireland fans in Kansas City or something? It's crazy.
Yeah. Oh, it's gonna be crazy. That's gonna be crazy. That I'm really looking forward to again that the fan experiences that people have. And then here in New York, it's like, you know, I always say, man, if you can't go to the World Cup, I don't care where the World Cup is. If you can't go to the World Cup, just go to New York. Because it doesn't matter what teams make it, whatever 32 teams or 4,200, whatever the number is now. They got people here, and they got a spot here.
Oh, bro, you know what I mean? Queens alone.
Queens
got you covered. 48's easy for Queens.
Yeah, yeah. So I love the energy that's going to be here in town. And again, it's like most of us aren't going to get to go to these games, right? But make no mistake, I'm not going to that game at Giant Stadium, but I'm going to a watch party somewhere. I'm going to this bar. I'm going to my homie's place because he's having a cookout, and they're going to have the game on the big screen, whatever. Like, all that stuff is what makes the World Cup great. In my eyes, you know.
And then we got a mayor that loves soccer. So that
mayor, that's your boy, right?
That's our boy.
That's your boy. Y'all took
if you watching.
Y'all took City Hall.
Yeah, bro. Sean Francis, it's always an absolute honor, bro. Where should people be focusing on when is the finalists going to the winner going to be picked for best job in the world?
That will probably be announced in March.
In March, okay.
Yeah. So the content's going to run through February on at Copa90 on Instagram and TikTok in the various contestants' handles.
Okay.
Can't name all those.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All right, man. I'm excited for this. I'm excited for you. And I know, obviously, Copa90 is going to be doing a bunch of fun stuff along the World Cup and stuff like that. But Sean Francis, is always a pleasure.
Always welcome on.
Thank you, boys.
Thank you so much for joining us, brother.
Pep Guardiola is having a rough January along with Manchester City. This doesn't feel like a typical January kind of winter slide. This might be even worse. Let's talk about why that is. And also, I got one thing that still, as an Arsenal fan, gets me a little worried.
It's looking really bad, but I think
Pep has not replaced the players that he has lost, and this is why they're in the slump.
I mean, they spent a lot of money, but I think it's something different. I think it's actually more about Pep than it is about the players on the pitch.
Interesting. I mean, I'll start with the fact that the I'll go to Erling Haaland's comments after the loss against Bodø/Glimt, right? It's a fairly embarrassing loss for Manchester City, even though it is away. Even though Bodø/Glimt has had some pretty good results these last, like, two Champions League seasons. So,
but to quote a tweet that I saw, Manchester City lost to a Wi-Fi password.
Sure. I was thinking, like, they lost to someone's pronouns. Yeah. You know? Yeah, yeah. Bodø/Glimt. But the fact that Erling Haaland was focused on, he took a lot of responsibility and he was sort of blaming the other veterans on the team for this loss. I mean, I don't know if you saw, obviously Declan Rice got a yellow card in the game against Inter and he's going to miss the game against Kairat.
Oh no.
And, right. And some people are like, he came on just to get that yellow so yeah. he can miss that game. But Bernardo Silva also not in this game, and there's a sort of thought, like, because of yellow card accumulation, or did he get a red? I don't know exactly, but he's out suspended for this game. And then it's like, all right, did they really underestimate or really not think that this would be much of a match for them?
Do you think Manchester City should need Bernardo Silva to beat Bodø/Glimt?
Well, I think they, as far as veteran leadership, they do need that on the pitch. And Bernardo Silva is obviously in a little bit of a decline. He's not the same player he was 3-4 years ago, but the not having Kevin De Bruyne, obviously Rodri being out for so long, and now he's back, but he picks up two yellows in mere seconds. And this happens with sort of every team, but the leadership is kind of missing. On top of the fact that, look, the injuries. I mean, you also can't forget about that. Manchester City has so many injuries. They played two center backs, one, I believe, 20 years old, the other 21 years old. So it's not too much of a shock of the result.
I can understand. And one of the things that stands out from this is the longest trophy drought since Pep's arrival, because they haven't won anything since they won the league in 2023-2024, which, you know, most clubs, it wouldn't even be a part of the consideration. Like, yeah, well, of course we haven't won since 2024. We won the league that year, and now it's like a big deal, right? I think when it comes down to it, to me, this is a signal that the Pep we've known, and you know, if you go back 3-4 years ago, Manchester City playing their B squad and even down a man probably beat Bodø/Glimt. And you probably don't, or maybe draw. I can understand the idea of, like, the leadership being missing, but I think it's actually more of an issue of Pep himself and the tactics, not so much the players on the pitch. Let me explain. Because when you look at his tactics, what we've seen in the past is Pep Guardiola changes the game, right? The false nine and everything happening in Barcelona. When he goes to Bayern Munich, everyone has to adjust to him. When he goes to Manchester City, everyone has to adjust to him. And then you have all people hiring, you know, Pepites, and all the coaches that learned under Pep, Arteta, Enzo Maresca, all these other coaches. De Zerbi to some degree, like, you know, everyone's like, oh, is he a little bit of a Pep? And then what you start to see is, wait, Arteta's starting to shift. Maresca's starting to shift. De Zerbi, his time in the Premier League, shift. Andoni Iraola over at Bournemouth, they start shifting the way the tactics are, responding to the possession game with, all right, we're going to man mark you and we're going to do these things that defensively are going to disrupt what you do. You saw Mikel Arteta have to, every year after year, have to adjust what he does because, you know what, the tactics that we were deploying 5, 6, 7 years ago just aren't as effective or aren't as efficient as they were before because defenses have learned how to deal with this. And you've gotten players that can handle, you know, the defensive responsibilities. So now all of a sudden, Pep isn't changing and adapting. He's not the one that's leading the pack. He now has to be the one that's adapting. He needs to be the one that's changing. He said himself after the game, the tactics just aren't working like they used to. He's like, and I believe his quote was that the players were fragile. You don't hear him really talk like this very often. And when you do, usually it's a bit more pointed, but there's a slight defeated nature to the tone he's using that you don't very often find. He's usually a bit more defiant. And maybe it's the years of, you know, the amount of football that he's had to manage and his, you know, his wife leaving him because he swore he wasn't going to go back.
She went back to him.
She did. They're back together. But that's also why part of the reason why he's like, hey, maybe I'm done after this season.
the promise that he made, if we're going to believe what's in the reports, is that he was going to be done in this overwhelming, maybe that he hasn't had the time to sort of figure out the new thing that everyone has to adjust to. He now has to adjust to what everyone has figured out the new thing is. And he hasn't done that yet. And to me, I think back to like when Erling Haaland first got to Manchester City, he would make in runs behind and no one would pass him the ball, or not often, because the tactic was pass short, keep possession, marginally make your way up the pitch, get defenses out of position. Now he's like, all right, go long. We don't need Ederson to hit you on a dime. Go long. We'll figure it out. All right, kick it into space. Erling Haaland will get it. He's bigger and faster than everybody. He'll muscle any defender off of it. And it kind of worked. I mean, he's scoring buckets of goals. That's not a tactic we've seen him have before. And him just being like, whatever, I don't know, root one it for every once in a while. These things have me realizing Pep isn't, not everyone's looking at him going, all right, what's he doing? Because we need to figure it out. He's doing that to other coaches now. And these are coaches that, for the most part, came from him.
I mean, but what is the alternative? Would you say if you had the opportunity to get Erling Haaland on your team, do you say no? Because he's going to force you to play.
I'm not saying that. What I'm simply saying is the tactics that we understood, you know, Pep Guardiola having before, being the everything shifts, everything changes because Pep said, we're doing this now and everyone has to figure that out. That's not the world we live in now. You know what I mean? And I think a good example of that is just going along to playing to his strengths. Like an Erling Haaland versus Erling Haaland needs to understand what we're doing. He's coming here to figure it out. Yo, when you've got a machine, use the machine. You know what I mean? You got a Ferrari, you drive a little bit fast. Don't just go pick up groceries. But overall, I think the slump we're seeing isn't so much the players are tired or we don't have leadership. Those are all important parts of it, right? Congestion and calendar and match fixtures, all those things, all important. I think what we're also seeing is Pep Guardiola not being the leader of the tactical shifts in the world of in the game of football, like we saw in the past. I think we're seeing him have to figure out a way to adapt to teams that have kind of figured out his tactics, and he hasn't changed fast
enough. I don't agree with that, mainly because he has this sort of run, at every team he's been at. Like, it worked in the beginning, and you have a lot of success, and then it can't work forever. I mean, that's every coach says this about every player that they coach and any team that they manage, that the message just doesn't sink in.
But it's not necessarily that. I mean, think back to the changes he's made even since he's been at Manchester City. A major tactical shift was John Stones running the ball forward and how good he was with the ball at his feet. He didn't need a defensive midfielder to sit back and wait for the pressure. His center back could take it forward. Okay, defenses figure that out. Next thing, putting a center back as your left back and having him venture forward and being nearly at the wing. Gvardiol, where this guy's scoring goals out of nowhere, where this guy was a center back. That's okay. Now we need to shift. Oh, okay. They're going to have center backs roaming in this area. Sure. Now we need to shift. He's always found a way to shift the culture versus now the culture has shifted without him in a way. It's not a major shift, but it's a slight shift where he's not the leader of the pack anymore. The pack has moved ahead of him in a way. And I think that's a part of this. And I don't know if it comes from maybe his personal life or he's just like gassed or exhausted. It feels like he's just like, I just can't keep reinventing football. I just need to sit back. But there's a fear that he's not adapted fast enough, and Manchester City is now going to suffer in a way, like they haven't had a trophy in a while.
Sure.
They're going to suffer in a way. But remember I said that there was like a little thing that still got me scared.
I've been on the edge of my seat. I can't wait.
Well, then welcome. Everyone else in their cars parked on the highway with the blinkers on, just waiting to hear what I have to say. Every once in a while, Pep Guardiola, his team goes through a little bit of a slump. Right? It's a little dangerous, but every once in a while they go through a slump and he's just like, I told these guys they're not as good as they were. They think they are. And we need to try hard and work harder. And what happens is it awakens the monster, right? The season where they caught up to Arsenal and beat Arsenal, was that 2 years ago, if I'm not mistaken, before Liverpool won it. Again, it feels like it's a little bit of a rope-a-dope. It feels like Manchester City and Pep Guardiola are trying to find a new way to inspire his team. And maybe it's having some of these, you know, lackluster matches, you know, a couple draws in January and a big loss against Bodø/Glimt. Now's the perfect time for them to take on that second half of the season run that they seem to always find. I know they didn't last year, but they seem to always find where they can turn it on. And next thing you know, it's 3 points after 3 points after 3 points. And every other team above them starts to slip little by little, draws, draws, draws. And before you know it, Manchester City wins the league.
Sure.
And maybe that's just a paranoid Arsenal fan.
You're just like a whiny Arsenal fan.
Not whiny.
Just like
PTSD. Because I've seen it before,
you're just
man.
Worried about the worst. I mean, look, I have no, there are clear problems, and the bigger issues are the slew of injuries. The players missing for Manchester City are really the kind of staple pieces to implement whatever tactics that Pep Guardiola wants to have.
They didn't lose to Real Madrid. They lost to Bodø/Glimt, and that's no disrespect to Bodø/Glimt.
But they have two children at center back.
That never mattered before. The first time we saw it was Roger coming out, seemed to have collapsed the Jenga. You know what I mean? But that was one season ago at this point.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about what they have to. Manchester City finds the greatest of the greatest players.
Sure.
It's not. This isn't Aston Villa, who they're great, but then they get thinner. They should have two 11s. The fact that they brought up a bunch of young players shouldn't mean anything. When you're playing Bodø/Glimt,
I mean, look, it's a Champions League club. I mean,
but that used to not be competition for them.
But that's credit to a lot of the sort of quote unquote underground teams in Champions League that we don't pay a lot of attention to are getting better and able to compete. They normally play against cities, Arsenals, Real Madrid, mm-hmm. and they get absolutely washed. They get humiliated in their stadiums, and now things are changing.
Which I'm happy about.
The Champions League games are getting a little bit more competitive.
But that, I think it says a lot about Bodø/Glimt and how much being a part of this competition has elevated their game. Absolutely. I think it also says a lot about where Manchester City is right now. And they're not the Manchester City of old. They're now in that tier A. They're fighting for an eighth spot, if I'm not mistaken. I haven't looked at the standings, right? Manchester City?
Yeah, they're like at the bottom of the table. At the bottom, as far as
the first, getting the bye.
Yeah, yeah.
That's not the Manchester City of old. Manchester City of old, they'd be top of whatever group they were in because obviously there was an elite
Champions League season, they barely made it.
Bad. That was a bad year last year, which I think also is a point on my part of the argument.
So, look, as far as it's results like this that obviously have you questioning whether Pep is going to stay. Did he sign a contract for one more year?
I think his contract runs out after one more year, but I think the rumor is that he's not.
Yeah, look, does he look as happy to coach Manchester City as in the past? No, he does not. But there are a lot of elements, again, the injuries and the players that are there, like Ryan Cherki over Kevin De Bruyne, who is you know, effectively filling that role, is he's not the same, right? I mean, it's like Kevin De Bruyne is a better player. Cherki has glimpses of like absolute brilliance, and I think he could get there.
Yeah, but I think that says a lot about Pep Guardiola. Maybe it's just the players available, but Pep Guardiola going out and finding a maverick, you know, in place of a Kevin De Bruyne, which was not really a maverick. Had it in him, certainly can take over a match if he wanted to, but that guy understood the system better than anyone else and would make the right pass, quote unquote, where you got Ryan Cherki, who's like, I know you want me to do ABC, but how about I do XYZ right now? And Reinders is kind of a similar. Semenyo also has that in him. The types of players he's bringing in aren't your typical Pep players.
I don't know what that means. What's a typical Pep player?
Like someone who's willing to follow the system within in and out, you know? I don't see that in Reinders and Cherki and Semenyo. These are players that will, if they find open space, can dribble and make their own play, if you will. You know what I mean? And they're mavericks. They're magic makers. Kind of the reason why people thought Grealish wasn't working. Because Grealish is like, how about I do something really cool right now? As opposed to do the... And look, back then it didn't work. And now these are the types of players they're trying to bring in.
Sure. I mean, I don't know. I don't necessarily agree with everything you just said about the profile of these players. But I will say that every dynasty is bound to crumble. Like, it's not going to last forever. You enjoy it while you have it. And new players come in.
I like this poems by Christian.
new players come in. Semenyo, Mark Gay. They need Gay. They need just a functional center back because they don't have enough healthy center backs. So this is what used to work in the past. It's not working now, so he has to find some way to adapt to the adversity that he's currently facing.
So I look, do I feel bad for Manchester City or do I feel bad for Pep Guardiola? No, not at all. They've had plenty of success, but this is my main question. And I, after that game against Bodø/Glimt, I'm like, hey, maybe Pep is done. That's really where my mind is at. I'm like, maybe he's just done. Maybe he needs a new challenge. Maybe he just needs new people to talk to.
Well, Marguerite is a new person to talk to,
and
right?
We'll see how that works.
We'll see how that works. I wonder what his new role will be.
Well, right, we know Crystal Palace is collapsing because Glasner looks like he's having a very public feud with ownership.
And they got out right at the last moment.
All right. But best of luck to Manchester City. Just the tiny little club.
They need it. They really need it. Hey, shouts to Bodø/Glimt, man. I hope none of their fans got offended by what we were talking about here.
All right, let's wrap up there. Shout out to Sean Francis of Copa 90 for joining us. Always great to reconnect with the homie. And again, someone who has so much history in the game. Been around for
You've been around for too damn long, bro.
Too damn long. Yeah, okay, man. We got to send him to a farm upstate.
He's like, I remember when the ball wasn't round. And we're like, all right.
OG.
We got to up the meds.
So shout out to Sean Francis for coming through. And as always, make sure you follow us everywhere at Soccer Cooligans. Hit like, subscribe if you
click all the buttons on
your
baby. Club,
click all the buttons on your phone. I promise it won't nothing will, no
there's a
happen.
Little thumbs up, click on that one. That one's really important.
Big fan of that one. All right, thank you everybody for tuning in. We'll be back on Monday with a brand new episode. We'll see if we can make it to the studio after this snowstorm.
Well, I bought skis, so I'll be fine.
Hell yeah. All right, so we'll see you then. Have a good weekend. I hope all your teams lose. Peace, everybody.
Love you guys.